Good morning. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. If you're just joining me now, I have two very special guests joining us on Get the Funk Out, and I'm here every Wednesday from 9 to 10 hosting Get the Funk Out since 2011. Wow. I want to give you the show blog so you can learn more about my guests and the show. GetTheFunkOutShow.KUCI.org. You can also find KUCI on our socials, KUCI FM. And what else? You can head over to our main site, KUCI.org, and learn more about all the music and public affairs shows. Okay, standing by to join me are South Coast Repertory Artistic Director David Ivers and Managing Director Suzanne Appel. And they're going to talk about SCR's most prolific season. What a calendar they have. Good morning.
Good morning, Janine.
Thank you both for calling in. Good morning, David. Good morning, Suzanne. I'm so happy we could make this happen. I looked at the calendar, and wow, what you have put together.
Well, thanks. Oh, we're really thrilled about it.
It's so exciting. How did the two of you come together and put together a season like this? Maybe we'll start with you, Suzanne.
Oh, sure. So, you know, I really rely on David's artistic vision, first and foremost, for what he believes will work best with our, you know, for our patrons. And really, we lean into figuring out kind of what are some anchor pieces in the season that are real artistic priorities. And then lean into, you know, it's very much a back and forth in terms of what we think will work best with our audiences and what of course we have the budget to produce, but
sure.
But David actually will really guides leading the selection of the plays, and our joke is that I just make sure that we don't go broke.
That's an important role, very important.
Yes.
So David, tell me more about your thoughts on that question, how you collaborate together.
I mean, that's the biggest part of my job, really. Also, I don't want us to go broke, so it's really a balancing act between Suzanne and I co-leading the theater.
Mm-hmm.
The process of season planning doesn't have a beginning and it doesn't have an end.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things up in my office on the whiteboard right now that I'm thinking about and we're thinking about for the following season and the season after that. And then there's new world premieres that are constantly in a cycle. So I think Suzanne's words about, like, what are the anchor productions are really valuable,
mm-hmm.
because that's typically how it starts to come together. We know we're going to do a Christmas Carol. We know that we're going to have a theater for young audience offering.
Yes.
And we also know that we have a new strategic plan which guides us into typologies for the plays that are based on feedback from our staff, in part based on feedback from artists who we must not ignore in the process, because challenging artists typically results in stronger quality, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And so these typologies start to fall into some categories that we know our audiences are curious about.
Sure.
World premieres, classic plays, plays with buzz or that are just coming out of New York after having kind of thrilling productions.
Sure.
Of course, musicals, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in our case, also some what we call presenting. So what are things that are already made, right, that we want to bring into our offerings that complement or challenge some of the things we have on offer. And what we arrived at for next season is a pretty, I think, compelling and a very hopeful,
yes,
which is nice, and a very fun season that also does not replace our ambitions artistically with just fluff, if that
yes.
makes sense.
Oh, it does make sense. And also, I'm sure the challenge of a post-pandemic audience, getting people to come out. Tell me about what it was like when you finally relaunched a season, and you're probably seeing so many more people now.
We are. David should speak to, you know, sort of what it was like right after the pandemic.
I heard a heavy breath.
Well, I would just say that I think what's kind of nice about Suzanne coming in when she came in, she's almost a couple of years into the job now as co-CEO, is that the timing was great because we really, prior to a couple of years ago, there'd been really no predictability, you know?
Sure.
So there weren't a lot of patterns emerging, if that makes sense.
It makes sense.
And so I'm really heartened by who's come back. We always want more people to come back, and I think it is a long road to people feeling like, oh, yeah, this is an art form and a form of entertainment that feels compelling enough for me to leave home, you know, and for me to gather with other people to have a common experience.
Yes.
I will say it feels terrific to see not all of our shows, but a lot of our shows really well attended.
Mm-hmm.
People that have been here have a lot to say about what we're doing. And I think that that is inspiring and will lead to us figuring out our pathway to becoming really vital and having a measure of predictability in the work and audience turnout.
Yes. And there's tremendous power in live performance. I know, you know, sometimes you can be going through something and you go to a show, you have this mental vacation experience, as I would say, and you're connecting with art, but also you're connecting with yourself.
That's so true. I think what we are really hoping for and see in our audiences is a desire to be connected to each other.
Mm-hmm.
In this moment in time, we have seen a real rise in depression and loneliness in our country.
Mm-hmm.
It's been labeled an epidemic by our former Surgeon General
Vivek Murthy.
Vivek Murthy. And we recognize the theater as a space that has a potential to really be a bulwark against that loneliness.
Yes.
Storytelling is our, most intimate and human of art forms, and creates a sense of shared experience and purpose for, our humanity. And we see people really desiring coming back together to be in community, to be in a third space where they can share something in common with their neighbors. And we really believe that South Coast Repertory provides that for Orange County. We feel very blessed to have seen an increase in our audiences over the last number of years, which is part of what gave us the courage to further expand the season and add additional productions. As David was discussing, we had over a 10% increase last season from our numbers right out of the pandemic, and we expect to have more people attend this season than last. We haven't quite finished, but we still have Hershey Felder in his new world premiere piece, The Piano and Me, coming up shortly, and Candace Bushnell is with us this weekend.
I saw that.
We're really excited about.
Yeah.
But we're anticipating that we will have continued to see that growth, which we see as a testament to people saying, "I want this in my life, and I miss the theater, and I want to see more of it."
I love that. Before we jump to David, I want to say something, Suzanne, because I do a lot of mental health advocacy work, and you just mentioned the loneliness epidemic, which, I've been aware of that for a while. And it's very important that listeners are aware of that. It's not just them. There's this lack of connection, and we need human connection. We need to focus on our social health, And so that's why I mentioned, going to the theater, it does give you a chance. You can even... How many times do you look over at the person next to you and you both experienced emotions over a scene?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's even research that shows that our hearts sync up when we're sitting in the theater next to someone, a total stranger.
Yes.
But that our hearts actually end up beating in tandem as we breathe together and experience great theater together.
That's fantastic. I love that you keep that in mind about your audience.
It's very much something that we think a lot about. David, I really want to lean into sort of his vision here, been very adamant that we engage, continue SCR's history of engaging with our audiences, We have an incredible artistic engagement associate, H. Adam Harris, who we love working with. And next season, you're actually going to see even more ways to engage with our plays that change the relationship between the theater artists and our audiences. We're actually going to be bringing some of our post-show conversations out onto the terrace.
That's fantastic. I was going to mention the show Every Brilliant Thing on Broadway.
Mm.
So right now, Mariska Hargitay is making her debut doing this. What are your thoughts on that? David, we'll chime in with you.
What are my thoughts about the show?
Because it's audience engaging.
Absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous. I mean, it's everything you hope for in the theater. One, it's compelling. It has it in its DNA. Without it being overly preachy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It has a commonality about wellness.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also has the inimitable magic of the theater, which is that every single night that show is different based on who is there.
Yes.
And based on actually some math, some science in a way, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
That appears to have a randomness to it, and I think it's a really brilliant piece of programming for right now. It's no wonder why it's having. I mean, it helps to have launched it with Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes,
and Mariska will be amazing.
Amazing.
But no, I think it's super smart.
Yes.
It's also hanging up the rights for regional theaters.
I know.
But that's okay.
I was actually just in New York and saw it. So
you did
with Daniel Radcliffe, which was incredible. And David and it's funny that you brought that piece up because actually David and I have been talking about it quite a lot over the last couple of weeks. But I think what that show does so beautifully that David is also imbuing into so much of our work at SER is that it really does engage the audience.
Oh yes,
really. Beautiful ways, and one of the key pillars of our strategic plan is to expand what we're calling Beyond the Fourth Wall programming.
Great.
Which is basically anything that we do that recognizes that the audience experience begins as soon as they come to the theater, and folds in every element of that experience and asks them to really engage with the art. But David, do you want to talk a little bit more about your vision for Beyond the Fourth Wall?
I think sort of Suzanne touched on it. We were heading there a while back based perforce, so to speak, from the pandemic by moving some programming outdoors to the Mission.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a good example, I think, of really finding an audience, right, and moving ourselves into a different orientation of how we typically produce the theater. And I think our hope is that over the next several seasons, certainly over the life of this plan and beyond, we will find ways where the fourth wall, so to speak, is not necessarily always disintegrated, right, but it's blurred.
It is.
Right?
Yeah.
Or that there's an experience that you might arrive to at the theater that creates an event beyond the event of what's happening on stage.
Mm-hmm.
It supports it. It gives further context, or it might just be a ton of fun.
Exactly.
To help create a magnet for what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that, like it or not, we're competing, you know? So what are the things that live can do?
Yes.
That nobody else can do.
Yeah.
And I think the Beyond the Fourth Wall programming, of which we have a little bit next season, just in an immersive way with, for instance, Blind Runner, which is a piece that we're working on with Mare Theater out of Iran. And that is immersive, in my opinion, in a different way, just in that its use of technology is not something that would be foreign to our audiences, but it really is highlighted in this production.
I love
it's
that.
It's just very, very, it's integral to the storytelling because it relies in part on distance between a man and a woman and incarcerated women. So things like that, I think our audiences can expect to sort of populate as we head to the next several seasons. Yeah.
Could you both talk about, or one of you, the lab? It's for...
Yeah, the lab.
Yeah.
Sorry, Suzanne, you want me to...
No, David, I think you take it. Yeah.
Okay.
The lab at SCR, actually, I'm very proud of the lab at SCR. It didn't really exist by name when I got here. And what did exist was a variety of different ways by which... existed in a variety of different ways here at SCR, was not put under an umbrella. And so one of the first things I did was sort of go, okay, here are all the ways in which we create new work here at South Coast Rep. We commission young artists, we commission mid-career, we commission advanced career playwrights, we do one-day workshops, we do Pacific Playwrights Festival, we do developmental workshops, we do all these things to really create the next voices in the American theater, or to highlight the current voices in American theater and to continue to advance their careers. And that lab now has a name, the Lab at SCR. All those development sequences are housed under that. The Pacific Playwrights Festival is housed under that. Our world premieres are housed under that. And the next step for me was putting a person in charge of it. Mm-hmm. We now have a director of the lab, Andy Knight, who's amazing. And really, it's an essential part of the touchstone and the legacy and the future of South Coast Rep. And I know Susan's very excited and has experience of launching a lot of new plays. And so it's been a really cool thing for us to strategize to make sure it stays and also becomes vital again.
So for people listening, let's say there's a student here who's a writer. How does the process work? They come to you, they say, I have this idea for this play. I'd like to be part of the lab and learn more and see about developing this, or how does it work?
No, I mean there is a version of that, right?
Okay.
There's a version of either student or young writers who might find access to us, but this is really on a national and international scale.
Okay.
Right? So we actually, at the moment, unless it's coming directly to me or someone on artistic staff or to Suzanne, we wouldn't survive by taking what they call direct submissions. We literally be a workforce issue. We read thousands of plays, I should say high hundreds of plays in a year. And so those are all basically coming to us from known channels, mm-hmm. literary agents at the top agents in the country, other artistic directors, other literary managers at other theaters, friends, colleagues. And those go through a curation process. They go through a reading, what we call book club, right?
Mm-hmm.
And most of those writers, I would say 80 to 90% of them are represented by agents.
Okay.
And with those submissions, which are already vetted by the fact they have literary agents or they're connected to another theater,
yes.
we're still reading in the high hundreds, approaching like 1,000 plays.
Whoa.
Which is crazy,
it's
you know?
It's a lot, yes.
Yeah.
Where...
So that's not to say we wouldn't, of course, support students, and we do.
Yeah.
It's just that we're looking for productions that we can world premiere and then send on to other theaters or send out into the industry, if that makes sense.
Makes sense, yeah. Go ahead, Suzanne.
I didn't mean to interrupt David, and I realize that's exactly what I did. I think that the area that we have the closest connection with UCI on right now is a program through the MFA theater program, which is called The Next Stage, mm-hmm. which we formed actually just this year was the completion of our pilot year. And it was really wonderful. We love working with Joel Veenstra. And,
oh, yeah, I know Joel. He's been on.
Lopez.
Yeah.
They've become, you know, really great colleagues of ours. And through that program, we've offered apprenticeships to MFA students across a number of different roles, from understudying to backstage positions for stage management MFA students,
mm-hmm.
and through, you know, apprenticeships with our designers as assistant designers. And that program is one that we will continue to expand into next season, and provides real professional opportunities at the highest level. I think just to sort of echo something that David said, I think it's the community of Orange County probably doesn't realize that South Coast Repertory is probably considered the among a handful of the leading world premier theaters in the country. I think it is would not be unrealistic to say that we commission, develop, and produce probably more world premieres than any other theater in this country. Certainly, certainly commissioning.
Yes,
but that also means that as David was sharing, that this is we are operating at very much the highest level in the country on national level, and that means that when the UCI students who are MFA students are working with us, they are really working at a level that is not just professional theater, but among the best in the country. And
sure.
We feel really lucky to have that partnership and to get to work with those students, and that's really helped us to actually expand the number of classics in particular that we're able to produce at South Coast Repertory, and are really thrilled to use that as a teaching experience for the students as much as it is an incredible way to produce larger classics for our audiences.
Sounds like a stellar experience for them.
Oh, totally.
Did you
want to? For us, too. You know, it's a great reminder when you're in the academy and with the students of the energy, you know,
mm-hmm.
the wonder, the curiosity. All those things come to the surface pretty quickly, I think, for students. And it's a great reminder for us that we're so fortunate to be in the arts, you know.
It sure is, especially with what Suzanne was mentioning with, you know, struggles with disconnect and mental health and on and on. And it's a beautiful thing. And I don't feel a lot of people spend enough time prioritizing the arts.
It's interesting.
No arguments here.
Yes.
Yeah, no, we're not going to argue. We won't argue, but I will say there are interesting things that have come out of the NEA has actually studied this. And there are two things that prevent people from attending the arts. One is just getting it on the calendar,
mm-hmm.
right? So time. So I always tell people that getting a subscription is the best way to make sure if you actually want to go to the theater, if you want to put, you know, have it become a larger part of your life, subscribing, you know, or getting a Flex membership, which means you can pick whatever you want to see over the course of the season. But a subscription, you know, although old school, is definitely the best way to actually just get it on the calendar. And then the other challenge that people face is finding someone to go to the theater with.
Yes.
And this is, you know, the numbers are actually like really high. Something like 40% of Americans say they would see more live performance if they had someone to go with. And I think this speaks both to that loneliness challenge.
Yes.
And also, you know, to something that we're looking at South Coast Repertory, which is how can we invite people to come as a single, you know,
right.
and make friends here.
Yeah.
But we really believe, you know, many of our post-performance talkbacks or our pre-show events, our Inside the Season, all of those are opportunities to meet other people. We had a great event this year, earlier this year, that I think we're trying to find a moment to replicate called The Longest Table, where we invited members of the community to just come and bring, it was basically a giant community potluck.
Oh, I love this.
On our terrace.
Yes.
Before seeing a play. And people wanted to meet other people to talk to, you know,
yes,
to talk about
yes.
theater with. It was,
yeah.
It was just so encouraging and really a sign that I think people are looking for this, but need these moments of connection, but need
yeah.
an invitation to find. You know,
now, Suzanne, you do know that Dr. Vivek Murthy talked about the power of potluck to bring people together?
You know, I didn't actually.
Yes.
But that, he was absolutely right. And
yes.
This group called The Longest Table is actually
yeah.
a national organization who
I
we partnered
it.
With. But it's so true. It is.
Yes.
It is always, you know, for us, it was very much a reminder that gathering around food is a way of sharing culture.
It sure is.
And you know that anytime we're given an opportunity to meet others, where we have a chance to we bring something of ourselves, and
you
then
bet.
We you know we also have an opportunity to take what they
yes.
they've offered is just such a gift. So
yeah.
So look out for that again at some point in our season, maybe coming up this fall.
So we do have to wrap up, but I want to tell listeners, visit scr.org for more information. David, Suzanne, I've really enjoyed this. I hope to meet you in person at some point. Again, this is so tied to Mental Health Awareness Month, so it's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Janine, and we look forward to folks checking out our 26-27 season.
Yes, and let's do this again, okay? I would love
that. We look forward to it.
Okay, be well.
Thanks,
congrats.
Okay, take care.
Bye. Bye-bye. All right, that is a wrap for me. Up next, SoCal New Waiver with Pass Forward. If you missed any part of my conversation, my guest today, Andrew Ganz, or David and Suzanne from South Coast Rep, it'll be up as a podcast shortly, and the show blog, getthefunkoutshow.kuci.org. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. You can always shoot me an email to pitch any guests, and that email is Janine, J-A-N-E-A-N-E at KUCI.org. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week. You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.